Welcome to Water Insider, a podcast brought to you by DHI. Whether you work with urban or inland water systems, marine or offshore, we get experts to discuss everything water, so you can be the first to learn the latest in water tech and trends.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Water Insider podcast, where we discuss some of the challenges the new offshore wind energy markets like Asia and the US might face when assessing mid-ocean conditions. I am Tor Ulvig Petersen, and I've been in the offshore wind industry for a good 11 years now. My guest today is Meshach Gulistani, a specialist in mid-ocean conditions for offshore wind, and he has been working in the field for 10 years now. Both of us, on top of our experience, have worked for numerous offshore wind farm design basis studies and evaluations around the world. And we are both happy to be here for today's discussion. Let's get started.
Welcome, Meshach. Great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Tor. I'm very happy to be here. Very excited to share some insight and experience together with you, with our audience out there.
Great. Since the first offshore wind farm project was developed in 1991 in Vindeby in Denmark, the industry has come a long way and also expanded worldwide. Meshach, the majority of the offshore wind farms are located in the North Sea, the Baltic Sea, and also in waters around UK. This means the industry is already familiar with those mid-ocean conditions of these regions. But what are the mid-ocean challenges related to developing offshore wind projects in regions like Asia or US?
For those of you who are new to the topic, mid-ocean conditions consist of waves, wind, hydrodynamic conditions, currents, and water levels. As you just mentioned, Tor, the offshore wind industry has a lot of experience in collecting and analyzing the mid-ocean conditions in the North Sea and Baltic Sea. This is mainly due to the fact that there's a very long history of oil and gas exploration and production in these regions. Many of the oil and gas industry learnings have already been incorporated into offshore wind as we know it. But now, the offshore wind industry, we are moving to countries that we have never been before, like Taiwan, US, Japan, and South Korea. In these new regions or countries, the offshore wind industry faces new challenges, such as hurricanes, such as typhoons, earthquakes, stronger currents, deeper waters, and also different seabed conditions like sand waves, sand dunes, and also cohesive sediments.
This means that the industry must adapt to these different conditions to develop and operate wind farms in these regions. Can you elaborate on the challenges related to typhoons and also hurricanes?
Yeah, basically, generally speaking, for the design of offshore wind structures, you need extreme values of wind, waves, water levels, and currents, and also their joint probability. These extreme values, such as 1 in 100-year or 1 in 10,000-year wave heights, define parts of the loads on the structure. So in the North Sea, we have a long history of measurements and model and synthesized mid-ocean data, which we can use to reduce uncertainties and establish accurate design basis for the structures, while we are mitigating risk in planning, design, and operations. But in areas like Taiwan and Japan, where you have very strong typhoons approaching, establishing similar design bases as we do in the North Sea and as accurate as in the North Sea requires long-term measurements, which we don't really have. It doesn't really exist. In the areas, as you mentioned, like North Sea, there's plenty of measurements and big storms, which we can use for defining these extreme values and then tune the numerical models to reproduce these very large storms that have happened in the history. Therefore, the risk associated to defining these design values can be mitigated. But these nature of hurricanes and typhoons is simply very different than the storms we experience in Northern Europe. So therefore, it's quite critical for engineering decisions to understand these risks and incorporate these as early as possible in the design of the structures and their operations.
Absolutely. One prominent way of handling the complexity of such environmental conditions in engineering design today is by coupling data from many sources with models. You were saying there is a shortage of long-term condition data in Asia and the US. How do you handle typhoons, hurricanes in the models without enough appropriate data?
Yeah, I mean, talking about the typhoons, although there's very few measurements of typhoons, it's not easy to check whether they are valid or not, these measurements. So what I think is the best approach to tackle the issue of typhoons and then to model them correctly is to use an atmospheric model, which resolves physics and most importantly, of course, but also considers the effect of land, sea temperature, and so forth. An example of such a model that is kind of widely also used in the industry is WRF, or Weather Research and Forecasting Model. When we started the first offshore wind project in Taiwan already around five years ago, the common method in the industry was to use what is called the Holland model approach, which usually results in very conservative numbers because it doesn't really resolve the physics properly. It's cheap, yes, it's fast, yes, but so it makes it a very attractive option early in the project. But later, when the detailed design stage comes in, all of a sudden the turbines could not withstand the very large wind speeds at the hub height coming from this Holland model, values such as high as 65 or 62 meters per second. So then we started recommending and applying these so-called WRF models, which resulted in reducing the design values by around 10 meters per second, and of course was also certified and validated.
That's quite impressive. Let's say a most immediate question is how you introduce such approaches, new approaches to the market, and how do you get it certified?
Yeah, good question. Actually, that's been quite a big challenge. I mean, when you introduce such new approaches to the industry, they come with a cost that has initially been quite difficult to justify its importance. But what happens later if such risks are not mitigated is, in fact, the delay in the project and millions of euros of cost or more cost, we can say, associated to these conservative design approaches. So it was very challenging for all parties, for us as specialist consultants, but also for the developers. But right now, I see that in other areas like Japan and US, which you can see that have come a bit later after Taiwan, developers and certifying bodies are using these lessons that were learned in Taiwan and tackling these issues quite early in the project. The standards are also getting updates to guide the industry for these sort of issues to have it smoother. We can also expand these further to the statistical methods used to establish the extreme values, which I spoke about a little bit earlier in the podcast. The industry tends to prefer more traditional methods of calculating these extremes and the joint probabilities because it's easier to comprehend and more conservative, of course. However, today we have more advanced methods which are slowly being accepted by developers and certifying bodies, which reduce uncertainties and conservatism, which would actually result in major cost savings. So yeah, they are more timely, of course, to implement. They are more costly as well to implement, but the cost associated to do such studies is within a few thousands of euros, as the cost saving is in the order of millions of euros.
Besides typhoons and hurricanes, what other types of challenges have you experienced which are not so common in the North Sea? You can say over the past 30 years with predominant installation in the North Sea, I guess there are other challenges as we look to other regions internationally.
Yeah, actually, this is something we're also dealing with as we speak today. One other issue that we hear way more from different contractors are the difficult conditions at the site, meaning that there's lower workable time windows and more issues in relation to installation. Due to many years of experience in the North Sea, most vessel operators, they know the conditions well, and they've adapted to the quality models and the model data that is available. But in areas such as Taiwan or Japan, we have long period waves that are more complicated, and they come from various different directions. These, you can say, complex sea states introduce very hard times on the vessel for the people on the vessel, for the people who are trying to install or do maintenance or whatever other activity they are trying to do. And sometimes it makes it impossible for them to work or to perform work. So what we can do to mitigate these risks is to establish numerical models that are able to contain as much information as possible, including the waves that they travel from, for example, the Pacific Ocean and are generated in more nearby areas such as Taiwan Strait or Sea of Japan, but also do proper post-processing to make such data more easily available to the contractors to digest.
You talk about engineering challenges, you talk about how to mitigate risks and also to achieve optimizations in the design. And you also mentioned data. Is it easy to get access to relevant data, and does it provide new opportunities, let's say, in a modern world with machine learning and AI and other opportunities readily available for a designer or for a mid-ocean modeler?
Yeah, so the short answer is yes, there's plenty of data sources. Today we have a lot of global and publicly and freely available data from organizations such as NOAA, ECMWF, Copernicus, and some local, you can say, authorities. But also we have a lot of commercial data, such as what DHI provides to our users. The real challenge is how to use all different sort of data, like model data, satellites, measurements, and fuse them. So I think one thing that is the most important thing here for the developers and the users, generally speaking for the offshore wind industry, is to know how to validate such data and have access to transparent validations so they can actually choose which data is best and which one actually serves their purpose best.
Good recommendation. We are reaching the end of this episode. Thank you everyone for tuning in, and thank you, Mashan, for sharing your experiences and insight about the mid-ocean challenges that emerging offshore wind industry is facing in Asia and in the US.
Thanks for listening to Water Insider. You can find more episodes on our website, dhigroup.com, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us.